some of my testimony, my personal story, and I decided that that would be good. And then it was, which bit of my long life shall I share? And then I went to New Wine, and I heard a guy, and he said, it's really great when we share stories with each other of things that God did 20 years ago, but what about sharing stories that things God has done very, very recently? So tonight I'm going to share the story, a quick story of the past 11 months. And my heart for this evening is to encourage you to persevere through trials. My heart for this evening is to encourage you to believe that God is faithful. What I'm going to talk about tonight is not a poor me story. And I'm going to share with you an experience where I saw firsthand the all-surpassing power of God. And it all started on the 15th of September 2018, so just last year. And my life changed dramatically. I was living in Bristol, finishing my training for ordination, and I'd been asked to come and sing, which is strange because I don't do public singing, in a youth event at a church in the countryside. So, of course, I went and sang pretty badly, and, you know, it was all very awkward. And I got in the car to go home, and I checked my phone just before I drove off, and I had 27 missed calls from my younger sister, my mum, and my dad. Obviously, the first thought was panic, but what I didn't know in this panic was that I was about to enter the darkest period of my life so far. My younger brother, Matthew, who some of you may have seen, is 32, and he is a mountain biker. He loves to cycle his mountain bike. He loves to enter races in the mountains. And on the 15th of September, he was in an enduro race in the Mourne Mountains, and he had a crash in a remote part. And when my parents rang me, he was being airlifted to hospital. I can remember so clearly in my mind getting out of my car, standing in a car park and just screaming, oh God, please don't let my brother die. And when my parents and my brother got to the hospital, the doctor said to my dad, is there any family who's not in Northern Ireland? And Dad said, yes, his sister. And the doctor said, phone her, get her here. And what followed was, for me, a blur of booking flights, trying to pack, trying to decide what to take, praying, crying, stunned silence. And I actually, to be honest, can't remember the period between and walking into he was in a coma. He had been intubated as he wasn't breathing independently, and they had put a probe in his skull to measure the pressure in his brain. His injuries, his external injuries, were he had a fractured skull, he had a fractured spine, and he shattered his right cheekbone, and he was in a coma. And the next 4 days were spent waiting for him to wake up, because, you know, he'd hit a tree. He came off his bike and he hit a tree. And, you know, it's a bad injury, but you expect people to wake up. You expect them to be knocked out for a while and then to wake up. And the next 4 days were spent traveling to the hospital, sitting beside his bed, trying to coerce the nurses to let more than two of us in at a time, and praying and talking to him and singing to him and all the things he would hate, and waiting for him to wake up. I do remember quite a funny thing where my mum would stroke his head, and, you know, he doesn't have that much hair on his head, you know, because he's younger, but he's already losing quite a lot of his hair. My mum was stroking his head like this, and he would hate that so much. And I was saying to her, Mum, he would hate this. And Mum's like, no, he'd love it, he'd love it. I'm like, no, Mum, you're rubbing the hair off the top of his head. But what we didn't know at the time was there was more to come, and actually on the 23rd of September, he was finally stable enough to be taken for an MRI. And In this MRI, they discovered the reason why he hadn't woken up was because he had suffered a diffuse axonal injury, a DAI, and it's a form of extensive, and I'm just, this is a quoting this from what the doctor said, extensive lesions in the brain, in the white matter of your brain, where nerve endings have been severed or sheared. It's the most devastating type of brain injury. 90% of people who suffer this brain injury never wake up. And of the 10% of people who do wake up, many live in a vegetative state and many have an impaired life. So that week I initially went home for turned into 3 weeks. And cutting a long story short, it came to the point where I needed to come back to England because I was getting behind with essays and I was missing out on a lot of stuff that I needed to be doing to be ordained on time. And I spoke to my parents and, you know, we're Northern Irish, we're very forthright. And my dad says, "You're not doing anything here, go back. You being here isn't going to make him wake up any faster, so you need to go back. You have stuff." He would not thank you for quitting everything and coming home. So I did. I came back to England, and this was hard. This was so hard because I came from my family, and we were all suffering all together, to a community that was big and full of life, and nobody really knew what was going on. Everybody knew my brother was sick. Nobody really knew what was happening. I felt as though my life had just stopped. I felt like I was living in some awful parallel universe where nothing was okay and everything was wrong and nothing was right. And it just felt awful. It just was just weird and awful and horrible. And instead of rambling on, I just want to read to you some of a blog post that I wrote, because I felt that writing a blog post was the only way I could really explain to people what was going on. And I wrote, "I am grieving for the life we all once knew, grieving for normality and grieving that song that has disappeared from my heart. I can't sing, and I love to sing. I don't find joy in big worship anymore. I once loved big worship, where you could sing as loud as you wanted and nobody cared. I miss that about my life. I still miss that about my life." And I started to write poetry. It's funny how when you go through dark times, you find different ways of expressing yourself. And I wrote a poem. It's very short, okay? Well, I'm not very good. But I wrote a poem. And my poem says, "You may say he has no hope. You may say there's been no change. But the Lord speaks a different word. God Almighty throughout all of history has spoken a different word. In hopelessness, he speaks hope. In sickness, he speaks healing. In brokenness, he speaks a restoration. Knowledge has power, but it only has the power that you allow it to have. The Lord, he has the ultimate power. But what if there really is no change? What if this really is the end of the road? You may say there is no change, but the Lord speaks a different word." And I realized when I was putting this talk together for tonight, I realized that I actually wrote this poem to speak to myself. I wrote this poem to tell myself and my family that God speaks a different word over the situation. I wrote this poem to tell myself that I am not crushed or abandoned or destroyed or in despair, and that the power to raise my brother comes from God, because God speaks a different word. And I wanted to share this story with you this evening because it's still a lived reality for me. It is still something that I am recovering from. I don't have my song back. It's getting there, but it's not there. It's not there yet. Normally I have a song always, and it comes and it goes now. But the Lord spoke a different word, and he is carrying me through this process. And actually, God did in fact speak a different word. 6 weeks later, my brother started to wake up. And by Christmas, although he was in a wheelchair because he had to learn how to walk again, he was at my parents' house on Christmas Day. And after Easter, he went back to work. And on the 29th of June, he was sitting in Southwark Cathedral at my ordination. And on the 30th of June, he was sitting in St. Mary's Church. And it is the most miraculous thing I have ever, ever witnessed. You see, what I want you to know this evening is that our stories, they are significant and they're precious. And your pain is important. And the wounds that you carry are not something that we have to be ashamed of forever. They can be a powerful testament to the fact that God speaks a different word into our lives. You see, God says, I am a God and I know how to bring good out of bad. If you give me the pieces of your broken life, I will give you peace. See, if you are in a deep pit of hopelessness, if you can relate to anything that I've said this evening, you know, I don't know what has broken your heart. I don't know what's going on in your lives. But one thing that I do know is that Christ is the only one who speaks a different word over us. Because he understands our brokenness. He understands pain. He understands sorrow. He understands us more than we ever know. You know, Jesus' nail-pierced hands cup our tears. He counts them. He keeps them. They're precious to him. God says, not only have I seen every tear that has fallen from your face, I have counted them and I keep them and they're precious to me. Because we are precious to him. Because that is how much God cares. That is how much he loves us. And that is how much he feels our pain. He pays attention to us. He pays attention to the details of our lives. When we have our costumes on and the world thinks that everything is excellent, but inside we're falling apart, God pays attention. He doesn't condemn us for it. He doesn't step away. I went to, I went to Lee Abbey just after Christmas for an ordinance retreat, and it was great. And if you've ever been to Lee Abbey, you'll know it's a very special place. And, you know, the talks were great and the fellowship was great and everything was great. But one thing that has stuck with me from my time there was an older couple brought their daughter with them, and she was maybe a teenager, and she had some special needs and difficulties and was struggling in the sessions. And when she started to struggle, she'd start to rock back and forward in her seat. And instead of her mum and dad, you know, saying, calm down, sort yourself out, you know, stop doing that, sit still, either one parent would just put their arm on her back and rub her back, and she would calm down. And I saw that 3 or 4 times. And I felt like God say, that's what I do. That's what I do for you. When you get anxious, when you're afraid, when there's fear, when there's pain, when there's suffering, when you doubt me, when you don't know, I don't stand in front of you and say, well, you know, you need to sort yourself out. You need to sit still. You need to do this. I come, I stand beside you, I put my arm around your shoulder, and I reassure you that I am good. He embraces us. He doesn't step back from us. And in my entire life, any time I have ever felt anxious or fearful or I can't do it or I'm by myself or, you know, all those thoughts that we feel, all the doubts, all the worries, all the anxieties, God says one thing: have I ever abandoned you? Have I ever let you down? And God speaks exactly like that because he's Northern Irish. He says things like, darling girl, have I ever let you down? That's how God speaks to me. And actually, when I think about it, he hasn't. Because throughout this whole journey of Matthew and his illness and the trauma and the family, and I have quite a colourful history, throughout my entire life, God has never once dropped me and walked off. He has never abandoned me. Even when I feel like I deserve to be abandoned, he has never abandoned me. He puts his arm around my shoulder and he says, it's going to be okay. I'm here. I've got you. And you may tonight feel crushed. You may feel abandoned. You may feel anxious. You may feel in despair. But I want to tell you that God is still here, and that God is still good, and that God is still love. And his call to you is, give me the pain, give me your brokenness, and watch and see what I will do. We were never meant to carry half the stuff that we carry. Jesus died on a cross so that we did not have to carry it. And what we have to do is we have to take these millstones that we carry around our necks, and we have to take them and we have to put them at the foot of the cross, and we have to leave them there, and we have to trust in God's all-surpassing power to take the stuff, to take the burdens, to take the pain, to take the shame. That's why he died, because he loved you. That's the whole reason why God so loved. What would you do for the person that you love? God would do 1,000 times more for you. And he doesn't change. The winds don't change him. Politics doesn't change him. Our behavior doesn't. He stays the same. And the God who raised Jesus Christ from the dead is here. And his call is for you to come and give him these things, this stuff that you carry, because you were never designed to live with burdens. You were never designed to live with heaviness. And now I'm preaching to myself as well as to you. And tonight I just would like to, what follows, I would like you to, if you would like to, you either stand. And either come and we would love to pray with you. I would love to pray for people. You can get people around you to pray for you. You can open your hands to God and just say, Lord, just take it, Father. Take it. I can't carry it anymore. Imagine what we would be like. And I say this to myself all the time. Imagine what I would be like if I didn't carry half the stuff that I carry. Imagine what the world would be like if we didn't carry half the stuff that we carry. It would be a transformed place, and we would be history makers. We would be history makers. But first of all, it starts with us. It starts with us recognizing the stuff that weighs us down and giving it over to God and trusting that he will take it. Amen.